Good afternoon, and welcome to Community News, covering the towns of Shrewsbury, Northborough, Westborough, and Southborough. This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. In the next hour, we will be bringing you news from the Community Advocate, MySouthborough.com, and the Worcester Telegram and Gazette. Today, we will be reading from the most recent editions of those publications. This is John Riccio reading today with Mike Gregory, and we are coming to you live from the Patricia A. Fletcher Studio at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. And before we begin our regular articles, we have been asked to read this special public service announcement. The Worcester Public Library announced the opening of an interactive tactile exhibit at its main branch at 3 Salem Square from July 15th through August 15th. Created by Tactile Images, the exhibit uses patented technology that transforms iconic works of art into three-dimensional tactile renderings, allowing visitors to experience visual information through touch. The exhibit's design, in part, makes visual art more accessible to the blind or visually impaired. The exhibit, Seven Art Movements, examines the evolution of history's art movements through tactile reproductions of works by renowned artists, including Leonardo da Vinci, Johannes Vermeer, and Vincent van Gogh. It also explores stylistic characteristics of the Renaissance, Baroque, Neoclassicism, Impressionism, Post-Impressionism, Art Nouveau, and Expressionism. The exhibition features seven tactile images, each paired with a corresponding fine art print. The Worcester Talking Book Library is committed to ensuring that everyone has access to educational and cultural experiences, said Lee Ann Hooley, head of the WTBL. This exhibit offers a unique opportunity for individuals who are blind or visually impaired to engage with art in a meaningful way while helping sighted visitors gain a deeper appreciation for accessible design and inclusive programming. Once again, the Worcester Public Library announced the opening of an interactive tactile exhibit at its main branch at 3 Salem Square from July 15th through August 15th. And now, here is Mike to begin our regular programming with the news from Shrewsbury.
Thank you, John, and good afternoon. Shrewsbury's DPW project returns to the limelight, a new plan proposed. The Department of Public Works project is back in the spotlight. On July 9th, the town's Municipal Facilities Optimization Committee held its first meeting in quite a while as it continues to determine how to improve working conditions at the town's DPW facilities along South Street. In 2025, the town was faced with a $40 million plan that called for the demolition of the water and sewer garage, a renovation of the highway garage that included a 21,000-square-foot addition, and approximately $4 million in upgrades to an overcrowded and outdated town hall. Town meeting approved the project in April 2025, but in May, a townwide vote failed 2,500 to 1,900. The rejection brought the project to a halt. Despite meetings upward of 30 times prior to the ballot question, the Facilities Committee has met sparingly since. The Select Board did a postmortem in the aftermath of the vote, and members said that residents thought the project cost too much money, and the people were concerned about other projects coming down the pipeline. Indeed, financial questions were frequently raised about the project. After an initial budget estimate of $26.8 million, The Facilities Committee revealed in the lead-up to the vote that the project would likely run the town closer to $40 million. Residents took issue with the added funds for the town hall. The buildings aren't getting any younger. Both are at the end of their useful lives, with water and sewer building constructed in the 1950s, and so the Facilities Committee is back in action. On July 9th, Assistant Town Manager Keith Baldinger said the town started the project from scratch. The DPW buildings at South Street continue to be the most pressing need because of their condition and the critical operations that happen at those facilities every day. One of the lessons learned from the prior process is that we need to provide clear, reliable information before asking the community to support a funding request for this project. The new project proposal focuses on the DPW site only, with no funds for the town hall. Both buildings would be torn down. A one-story, pre-engineered building would be constructed that would contain all the administrative offices and the shop areas. Another building would be constructed for vehicle storage. There is no current price estimate, and there likely won't be for the time being, considering the facility's emphasis on communicating details clearly. But officials said the efficacy of the plan and the pre-engineered buildings will likely mean the project will be less expensive, and the process is ongoing. The goal is to move forward in a measured way and develop a clear concept to get a better cost estimate and provide more transparent information before any vote funding request is considered, said Baldinger. Shrewsbury man turns prostate cancer battle into recovery blueprint. When John Barron had a prostatectomy, he hoped the removal of his prostate, a walnut-sized gland located below the bladder, would provide the respite he needed. The procedure aimed to remove the cancer completely, allowing him to restart life as normal. Barron was told that he'd have results within 5 days. However, within 24 hours, he received an email containing the worst news of his life. The diagnosis was a group grade 5 prostate cancer. The cancer had extended beyond the prostate and had already spread to the regional lymph nodes, leading to a stage 4A classification. It was a type of news that you can never quite prepare for. It's a tough surgery, and you come out of it and you're hoping you're going to be the end of all your treatment, said Barron. You see those results and you realize it's only the beginning of the journey. It was extremely tough. But faced with a life-threatening diagnosis, Barron chose to fight, conducting months of relentless research as he navigated a complex and confusing medical journey. Now entering his fifth year of remission, he has released a book in an effort to help men who are trying to move forward after dealing with such terrible news. It's proven to be more than a book. To some, it's a lifeline, a glimmer of hope. There are more than 900 people every day that are now new to prostate cancer that are wondering what to do, said Barron. I want to tell them that the answer is out there. I'm so happy and proud that I put this together, and I'm excited to share it with others. In the aftermath of the surgery, Barron, a 30-year Shrewsbury resident, hustled to Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, a world-class research center in Boston. Restless, nervous, and uncertain, Barron found the accumulating information was one of the only things that could reassure him. He started reading everything he could about prostate cancer. His background as a healthcare executive taught him that there's no such thing as too many opinions. Dana-Farber gave him a unique treatment path, different from what he received before. So we got a third opinion, and then a fourth. Three different nutritionalists were consulted. No stone was left unturned. No citation was left unchecked. Devastation became determination. I had to change my mindset from being sorry for myself to trying to find something to do. I spent my career trying to improve healthcare outcomes for data and studying data to do that. So why can't I do the same thing and treat myself like a project? I started reading all that I could, and just thousands of studies, anything I could find, said Barron. Throughout all the research, Barron hardly acknowledged the obvious. Google doesn't have a cure for cancer. Some of the questions he was asking didn't have answers yet. But when he was unsatisfied with science, Barron relied on expertise. He found himself on the phone with a Danish urologist trying to decipher his methodology through broken English. Maybe there's no strong data, but there is data. Become the jury, weigh the evidence, he said. Barron's methods sometimes bordered on the extreme. For the last 4 years, he has tracked his nutritional intake, sleep habits, and exercise totals. Based on that system, he created a free online health tracker that others can use to monitor their own metrics. When he said he'd make himself the project, he meant it. And once the bulk of his treatment was over, Barron found another project, creating a book. In his search for information after his diagnosis was delivered, Barron found that reliable information was available, but unassembled. Conflicting opinions led to confusion. A half year in, he was carving his way to clarity. His wife, Cheryl, read three versions of the book. After late nights and countless hours spent evaluating and correlating information, the book Prostate Cancer Warrior was completed, meant for the 1 in 8 men who will receive a diagnosis in their lifetime. As long as I'm doing this for myself, I might as well help people along the way. It will help me learn it, and will help others who come after me to get the information. I wanted to write the book I wished existed when I was diagnosed. Barron came to realize several factors contributed to beating prostate cancer. Treatment, diet, exercise, and sleep are important, but amazingly, Barron discovered that one of the single biggest factors to recovery is inspiration, the belief that your actions can influence your future outcomes. In two large, long-running population studies following more than 70,000 adults, individuals who held the inspiration belief lived an average of 11 to 15% longer. As Henry Ford said once, "Whatever you think you can or think you can't, you're right." In an effort to get information to anyone who needs it, Barron released a free 30-page flyer that condenses his book's most important takeaways. Friends have already reached out to him saying that after reading the book, they've decided to get treatment. One man's most painful moment in helping other men through theirs. "It feels unbelievable, incomparable. I keep the book in my kitchen, and every once in a while I'll just go and hold it. I can't believe I've been able to have such a positive impact on people and be able to comfort people at a time of such vulnerability." Square One Players to bring forbidden Broadway to Shrewsbury. During the peak of the pandemic in 2020, Joanne Smith and Tara Aleno started the Square One Players, an effort to encourage face-to-face socialization, foster genuine connection, and bring together the local theater community. Smith recalls there being no grand expectations about the group's future. They just wanted to share their passion for theater, make memories, and enrich others, patrons and actors alike, by providing access to the performing arts. Today, the group is celebrating the 5-year anniversary of the first production. In August, Square One Players will present Forbidden Broadway's Greatest Hits, a world-renowned review that hilariously skewers Broadway's biggest hits and brightest stars, from Chicago to Phantom to Fiddler on the Roof and beyond. The theater community is a small community, and people talk to people. It's nice for us because it's obviously positive things being spread about us. People want to get involved. "We can't say enough good things about the people we've met doing this," Alano told the community advocate. The Square One Players have done a number of productions over the last half decade, each with their own challenges. Spamalot had a large cast. Run From Your Wife was also about timing, for instance. With Forbidden Broadway, the costumes are a focus, with unique clothing, wigs, and accessories for each section of the review. The Square One Players are proud to announce that the cast is primarily first-timers, with some actors so eager to join the production, they commute an hour to weekly rehearsals. Christy Forges and Stephanie Sarkeesian are the only returning members of the talented 15-person cast. Included in the cast, 11-year-old Kyrie Delaria will be the MC. "She was really good. She was amazing. We wanted to give her a shot," said Smith. Behind the scenes, Jeremy Woloski will be directing with the help of stage manager Marissa Hubbard and assistant stage manager Corey Taverna, a Shrewsbury native. Costumer Joel Seeger, new to the organization, has his hands full. "We're honored that they share their talents with us," said Alino. Forbidden Broadway runs August 1st to August 8th, 7:30 p.m., and August 2nd and August 9th at 2 p.m. at the South Gates Theater, Julio Drive. Tickets are $20 for general admission and $17 for students and seniors. For information on tickets or more questions, visit squareoneplayers.com. It's been enjoyable. It's been trying at times. It's been exhausting at times. But we've shared a lot of laughs. There's always something that we're laughing hysterically about backstage. We're always having such a great time, said Elena. And with that, we'll close on news and events from Shrewsbury. And after the next public service announcement, John will be back with news and events from Westboro.
The following is a public service announcement from the Worcester, Massachusetts Association for the Blind Support Group. Though vision and blind persons in the Worcester area are fortunate to have a support group sponsored by the Massachusetts Association for the Blind in Worcester, the group meets monthly at the Worcester Senior Center. The group provides information and resources to assist with daily living, assistive technology, transportation, and friendship. For more information, please call Marion at 508-754-0672. Again, that's Marion at 508-754-0672.
And now the news from Westboro. Longtime Westboro High principal to leave for a new role in Shrewsbury. After 13 years as principal of Westboro High School, Brian Callahan is leaving the district to accept a role with Shrewsbury Public Schools. After a competitive application process, the Shrewsbury School Committee voted on July 8th to appoint Callahan as the district's new Assistant Superintendent for Well-Being and Community Systems. The position, and what Superintendent Tiffany Ostrander is developing it into, is something very intriguing. It's more about what the district wants to do moving forward with the position, building up the community and the sense of well-being and belonging in the schools, developing that partnership with the community, Callahan told the community advocate. A Merrimack College graduate, Callahan taught history in West Boylston, eventually coming to Westboro in 2000 to serve as the high school's athletic director. After a stint as an assistant principal, Callahan became the Westboro High School principal in 2013. After all his time in Westboro, Callahan said he'd miss the community immensely. I've been there 26 years, and I've loved it. The district supported me. I feel like I've been committed at a high level to Westboro. I'm going to miss it. That's the simple answer. I think there's opportunity for me professionally in Shrewsbury, and to be honest, I feel that there's opportunity for Westboro. They're going to bring on another person who is going to make it better than what I was able to do, he said. In deliberations on July 8th, Ostrander told the school committee that Callahan was a student-centered, collaborative leader who approaches complex problems with curiosity, respect, and practical solutions. Throughout this process, we were continuously struck by Mr. Callahan's leadership style. He listens first, builds relationships intentionally, and earns trust through collaboration. These qualities are truly essential for the position, Ostrander said. The school committee shared Ostrander's enthusiasm. When I walked out of the interview, I was confident we had found that unicorn we were looking for. He really stood out in the interview process, said school committee chair Rachel Sharifi-Poor. The school committee's vote was unanimous. At the time of this article's publication, Callahan has yet to officially sign his contract in Shrewsbury. Details of that agreement are still being worked out. reached for comment, Westboro Superintendent Allison Borchers said that her district looks forward to communicating next steps with the community soon. Callahan will take over for Dr. Jane Lizotte, who devoted decades to Shrewsbury Public Schools in multiple roles and became the first to hold this assistant superintendent position. Lizotte retired in June, and Callahan looks forward to building on the strong foundation she established. Shrewsbury is a high-performing, high-quality school system with dedicated staff, respectful students, and a committed community. I couldn't be happier. If I was to leave Westboro for another district, I couldn't imagine anywhere else other than Shrewsbury, Callahan said. We're fortunate to have really strong school systems around us here in central Massachusetts. Joseph Sova elected as new chair of Corridor 9495 Chamber of Metro West. The Corridor 9495 Chamber of Metro West is pleased to announce the election of Joseph Joe Sova of GeoSearch Incorporated as chair of the Chamber's Board of Directors for the 2026-2028 term. The announcement was made during the Chamber's annual meeting on May 14th. Sova brings more than five decades of business and financial leadership experience to the role. During his 51-year career in commercial banking, he served as senior vice president at both Avidia Bank and Fidelity Bank. As an active chamber member since 2016, Sova has served on the board of directors and as a member of the executive committee. Since 2019, he has chaired the chamber's golf committee, helping raise thousands of dollars for the organization's scholarship program, which provides financial assistance to graduating high school seniors across the Metro West region. Beyond his chamber involvement, Sova also serves as treasurer of the Gardner Industrial Foundation and the Gardner Industrial Development Corporation, reflecting his long-standing dedication to community and economic development initiatives. I am honored to be elected chair of the chamber, said Sova. I look forward to working closely with our board of directors, staff, and chamber members to advance the organization's mission of supporting our business communities through advocacy, valuable networking opportunities, educational programs, and resources that foster business growth. Joe Sova has been an invaluable member of the Chamber's Board of Directors and Executive Committee for many years, said Karen Chapman, President of the Chamber. His experience, dedication, and passion for supporting local businesses make him exceptionally well-suited for his role. We are fortunate to have his leadership as we continue strengthening our business community and advancing the interest of our members throughout the region. The Corridor 9495 Regional Chamber of Metro West is the region's largest and most active business organization, representing nearly 600 businesses and organizations and hosting more than 60 networking, educational, and business development events annually. Any business interested in learning more about the benefits and advantages of chamber membership with Corridor 9495 Regional Chamber, visit the website at www.corridor9.org. And in that address, the 9 is spelled out in letters. Or call the office at 508-836-4444. And still with the chamber, they have some upcoming events. On August 4th, Woman in Business Summer Networking Event will be held at Brio 33, New England Bistro, from 5 to 7:30 p.m. in Westboro. And on August 18th, There's a summer networking barbecue at the Willows at Westboro from 4:30 to 7 p.m. Champions again. A year ago, Zachary Forget and Vikram Hirandani walked off the courts defeated and devastated. Duxbury had just swept their Westboro team 5-0 to take home the Division II championship. "It hurt a lot," said Hiranandani. "I thought about that moment every day." On June 13th, it was time for revenge. After a year of reliving the defeat, practicing hard so it wouldn't happen again, top-ranked Westboro took the court against third-ranked Duxbury in the championship. Westboro earned a decisive victory at MIT's DuPont tennis courts, besting Duxbury 4-1 to take home the Division II title. The Rangers have made the championship match every year since 2021, last winning the title in 2024. Hirandani said, "We've been dreaming about this every single day, about this exact moment, and the Rangers swept the doubles matches." At the beginning of the season, Westboro worked to set objectives and goals. It proved to be an easy exercise. "The only goal they wanted was to win a state championship," said head coach Len O'Neill. "It's fulfilling as a coach. They're a skilled group. I get them when they're already skilled. I just have to mold them into a team." Part of what makes the group so cohesive is a shared love of fast food. The night before the championship, the team went to Chick-fil-A. After the victory, the Rangers were excited to go to Dave's Hot Chicken. Whatever helps them bring home the trophy. "I don't think I'd want to do it with any other group of guys. Words can't say enough. We all really enjoy being together. There's no better feel than being with the guys on the team," said Forget. Added Lawek, another team member, "It's been a really special 4 years. This group is really close." And the Celebrate the Sound that have sounds that have shaped generations and the Spirit of a Nation celebration continues. Join for Spirit of Sound, a concert series celebrating timeless American music, community, and connection. Enjoy live performances in the courtyard at the Willows at Westboro. Guests are encouraged to bring lawn chairs for a relaxing summer evening. Please RSVP at least 1 week prior to the concert. Date by calling Director of Sales George Barrett at 508-321-7555. And up tomorrow night is the Amity Street Brass Quintet. And on July 29th, Dan Gable and the Abletones. Westboro plans inaugural Porch Fest. The Westboro Cultural Council has announced that its inaugural Porch Fest will take place on September 19th from 1 to 4 p.m. Porch Fest events are extremely popular. They are community-building events that often feature musicians set up on porches or lawns, allowing the public to stroll from performance to performance. At this time, the council is seeking Westboro residents in the downtown area, especially on and around Charles Street, who are interested in hosting performers on their lawn, porch, or driveway, or helping in other ways also. The council is also seeking application from bands and solo artists. And finally, Westboro resident Anu Nadkarni accepted a $1 million prize after she hit on a lottery ticket. Nadkarni stopped for gas and two tickets at the Shell on East Main Street in Westboro. The $4 million Lion's Share ticket was a winner. Congratulations to Anu. And that ends our Westboro segment of the program today. After the next public service announcement, Mike will return with the news from Southboro.
Hi, my name's Owen Devlin, and this is my story. When my doctor told me I was losing my vision, I was devastated. I worried about my future. How would I attend college, find a great job, start a family, or even travel around my own neighborhood? Luckily, my doctor also told me about the Mass Commission for the Blind. They connected me and my family to a counselor who helped us to set a vision for my future, one that included assistive technology to allow me to go to school and find a meaningful job, a white cane to help me navigate, and even tips on how to use Google Maps on my mobile phone. I found out that losing my vision wasn't the end of the world.
If your loved one is blind or visually impaired, find out if they are eligible to register for services. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB. That's 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.
And now here's Mike back again with the news from Southboro.
Thank you, John. And we're going to start with a lengthy article that should be of interest to everybody in Southboro. Should local nonprofits do more for your municipal budgets? Southboro Select Board member Andrew Pfaff, elected in May, hasn't wasted any time setting priorities. On the campaign trail, voters told him they wanted relief from rising property taxes. He pledged to ease the burden on homeowners by raising contributions from nonprofit landowners. Southboro residents have felt pinched recently. Residents have seen the town's tax rate increase by nearly 47% since 1990. At the start of the 90s, it was $980, now it's $1,436. That increase, paired with rising valuations, means that the average household bill in Southboro jumped 7.6% to $14,200. Northboro's average bill, for comparison, is $10,400, while Westboro's average bill is approximately $12,900. Southboro raises $52 million annually through property taxes, the town's primary funding mechanism, accounting for 77% of the community's total municipal revenue. Because only 5% of the town's taxable properties are classified as commercial or industrial, the tax burden falls heavily on homeowners. One way to grow the town's coffers is nonprofits, which are exempt from property taxes, to voluntarily contribute funds to the town. Such transactions are often frequently called pilot, or payment in lieu of tax payments. The four largest non-for-profit institutions are non-taxable real estate in Southboro include St. Mark's School, the Faye School, New England Center for Children, and Harvard University. St. Mark's, the 161-year-old college preparatory school, owns 15 parcels in Southboro with a total valuation of $171 million. The Faye School, the private day and boarding school for kindergarten through ninth graders, has 17 parcels for a total of $84 million. The New England Center for Children, a self-described leader in autism education, has 19 lots assessed at $49 million, and Harvard owns a 170-acre property with an assessed value of $33 million. If these properties were taxed, Southboro would receive a total of $4.8 million in extra revenue, according to Paul Sabella, the town's principal assessor. That would include $2.5 million from St. Mark's, $1.2 million from the Faith School, $700,000 from the NECC, and approximately $470,000 from Harvard. Southboro Select Board Chair Catherine Cook, who has experience negotiating with nonprofits, said that the private schools are fully engaged in the community and residents routinely use their gyms and fields at no cost. People think the private schools are rich. They're not, Cook told the community advocate, but we still have bills to pay. Pfaff, a Faye and St. Mark's graduate, said, Pilot payments have increased over the years as nonprofits have agreed to provide more cash to defray rising costs of services. We've made progress, but I'd really like to see more, he said. I'm not saying they're bad citizens. They are large employers, and we like them. But at the end of the day, that doesn't pay for services we provide. Cook and Pfaff support legislation that would allow municipalities to require tax-exempt property owners with real estate valued at $15 million or more to make pilot payments equal to 25% of what the property taxes would be if the organization were taxable. State Senator Jamie Eldridge, an Acton Democrat who represents Southborough, said he is opposed to the legislation. He said these challenging times for private schools and institutions, it would be a heavy lift for nonprofits to contribute 25%, he said. Pfaff said he's wary of excuses. They can pay half in kind, he said. They afford their water and utility bills, don't they? None of the non-for-profits have reached the proposed 25% threshold, but NECC comes the closest. At $104,000, NECC pays the highest amount of pilot dollars in Southborough. Michael Downey, the school's chief financial officer, said the school wants to do its part. As a result, when it purchases new property, the NECC pays the town an amount about equal to the real estate taxes that the former owners were paying. Different organizations have different perspectives. Susanna Waters, Fay's head of school, said she places a high value on the school's relationship with the town. Fay wants to be a great neighbor by sharing its facilities and making contributions to help sustain Southborough's budget, she added. But she said the 25% proposal would be a tremendous burden on Fay. We don't have the endowments of other schools have, and we aren't in a position to contribute to the degree others are nonprofits are, she said. Our endowment is $56 million compared to Harvard's $50 billion and St. Mark's $150 million. Still, Waters said Fay has agreed to contribute $100,000 over a decade towards the $15 million Southborough Public Safety Complex. Built in 2019, the facility houses the town's police and fire departments. In addition, Waters said that over the years, Fay has donated $20,000 for firefighter gear, $60,000 for a fire truck, and $25,000 for a police cruiser. Waters noted Fay is educating 83 students who reside in town, providing them with $365,000 in tuition aid, which is not counted for in the pilot calculations. She also says that the town is saving nearly $2 million because those students are not being schooled in Southborough Public Schools. St. Mark's head of school, Ivory Hill, said the school wants to be a good neighbor and that its relationship with Southborough is cordial. We try to, where possible, support the town, especially in services we frequently use, such as fire and police, he said. St. Mark's has increased its annual contribution to more than $100,000, he said. But donating 25%, or $615,000, would drastically alter the way the school conducts its business, he said. I know that private schools are perceived as having very big coffers, but our annual tax return, the federally tax-exempt nonprofits are required to file, maintain, shows us that we are not a lucrative enterprise. Endowments are not meant to be tapped unless it's a dire emergency. WUSOX Southborough Town Takeover this week. And a quick update. We were informed that there's been a change of plan since the original announcement. VFW Commander Wynot is no longer going to throw out the first pitch. Instead, Southborough's town clerk, Jim Haggerty, will be representing the town. The WUSOX invites Southborough residents to dominate the stands at their friendly town takeover-themed event. To help motivate our community, $5 from each Southborough-designated ticket sold will be donated to the town scholarship fund. 4 years ago, WUSOX began pitting neighbor towns against each other in a friendly competition to see who can drum up the biggest turnout. The marketing has shifted to focus more on civic pride than hometown activities gin up excitement. The WUSOX promote, join us at Polar Park on Wednesday, July 22nd, that's tomorrow evening at 6:45, and gather with your fellow Southborough residents, show civic pride, and enjoy an exciting night of WUSOX baseball. There is sure to be the talk of the town, so don't miss out. Come represent your town, support a local cause, and be part of something bigger than the game. The team hosts numerous town takeover events during the season. At the end of the season, the town with the largest turnout for the season through the takeover event will be rewarded with a trophy and special recognition. On Wednesday, July 22nd at 6:45, the WooSox Town Takeover are dedicated to the boroughs of Southborough, Northborough, Marlborough, and Westborough, plus Hardwick and New Braintree. The other area towns, Hall, have their own selected charities. Final summer block party this Thursday. If you missed the free, fun Southborough Recreation put on last week, mark your calendar for this week's block party. This Thursday is the second of two family-friendly parties that Rec is hosting this summer. The party is scheduled for 6 p.m. on July 23rd at the Finn School, 60 Richards Ave. No registration is required to enjoy the family-friendly drop-in party, and most of the fun is free. The event will again feature crafts, face painting on temporary tattoo stations, games, music with dance contests, and a visit from the Red Sox mascot, Wally the Green Monster. Omen's food truck will also be selling scooped ice cream. The venue also features the playgrounds and basketball hoop sides for elementary school-age kids, plus a separate one for preschoolers. Rex asked me to thank sponsors Eagle Leasing and the Southborough Community Fund for making this series possible. If the Southborough Police and Fire Departments aren't tied up, they'll also likely have representatives and vehicles there to add to the fun. Southborough Youth and Family Services relocating the historic Flag Street School building. Southborough Youth and Family Services is moving from one historic former school building in town to another, even older historic building. The move is part of the shuffling use for the town's historic buildings. Last week, SYFS announced its planned relocation to 25 Common Street. The move is scheduled to be completed later this summer. I received confirmation that refers to the old Flag School building. It abuts the parking lot for the Southborough Town Hall and the Tot Lot Playground and Pilgrim Church. In spring 2025, town meeting approved spending $150,000 on renovations to make the building suitable for the agency's use. Based on past public discussion, one of the key benefits of SYFS is providing more privacy for residents who use their counseling services. Recent meeting documents show that the changes include having three dedicated offices. The location should also give the department enough space to hold small events or classes. The SYFS move comes right 8 years after the town moved the agency out of the Fayetteville Hall, which was determined to have serious building issues. The select board was seeking to offload Fayetteville Hall and the costs of the headaches. Based on public outcry about the important history of the former Fayetteville Community Center, the town issued an RFP for buyers that prioritize historic preservation as one of the criteria. The building was ultimately purchased by John Deli Priscoli, who planned to renovate the building and restore and preserve its historic facade, convert it to an antique shop and office. Instead, he ended up selling the building to the Southborough Historical Society for them to build a new Southborough History and Arts Center. As a result of the project, Southborough Historical Society vacated their old digs, the Southborough Historical Museum, at the old Flag School building. As for SYFS' current location, they've been housed in the historic South Union building at 21 Highland Street along Southborough Rec. It's another town-owned building that the select board has talked about potentially offloading due to its own set of building problems. 3 years ago, the select board's discussion of options to study prompted public outcry. Neighbors argued for the value of the property to the south side of the community. A committee was formed to study the best use for the building, but didn't get very far before the select board chose to let it expire. The effort was complicated by the unknown fate of the current school buildings. That includes not only the potential costs, but the domino impact of voters' decisions. The planned use of municipal buildings has been intertwined with town decisions about how to handle the aging Neary school building. Just over a year ago, if voters had approved the new Neary project to build a new four-grade school, it would have resulted in the closing of the Finn School. If that happened, the select board would have considered relocating the recreation department and other departments to Finn. But the new Neary project failed to get voter support. And when the town presented choices for alternate school building projects this March, voters chose not to study any of the projects that looked at closing one of the public schools. That means it's unlikely that a building will open up for rec in the near future. However, voters will still be asked to make a decision within the coming year for what investments they want to make in NERI. What precisely they'll be asked to support is still to be determined. If voters reject the town's next recommendations, that could send officials back to the drawing board, and that could reopen the discussion about potential school closings. And with that, we'll close our news and events from Southborough. And after the next public service announcement, John will be back to conclude the program with news and events from Northborough.
Hi, the Bay State Council of the Blind has available free Braille copies of a new publication from the CDC. It's entitled COVID-19 Vaccination Guidance, and this one-volume publication focuses on information about the vaccines and vaccine safety. To get your free copy, send your name and mailing address to kim.charlson@perkins.org. That's kim.charlson@perkins.org.
And now we'll finish up with the events and news from Northborough. Northborough Fire Department tackles residential fire on Whitney Street. At 2:26 a.m. on July 8th, the Northborough Fire Department received a call from residents at 364 Whitney Street who reported a significant volume of smoke inside the basement of their home. The department called an alarm, and Northborough Fire Department, Marlborough Fire Department, and Westborough Fire Department units responded. The Shrewsbury Fire Department provided station coverage to Northborough. While units were on their way, all residents and pets safely evacuated. As units arrived, heavy smoke was showing from windows, doors, and the roof of the structure. Firefighters face significant challenges locating the basement due to heavy smoke and the house's unique floor plan. Northborough Fire Chief Neil Aspese wrote in a release. The bulk of the fire was controlled within 30 minutes. One firefighter was evaluated for injuries, but transport to a hospital was not necessary. The fire is under investigation. The residents credited their working fire alarms for keeping them safe. They were awoken by the alarms, allowing them ample opportunity to evacuate their pets and leave the house without injury. Trail Network Coming to Town. Northborough is moving forward with a feasibility study for its portion of the Boston-Worcester Airline Trail, or BWALT, a regional shared-use path that could eventually connect regions of central Massachusetts. During an open space committee meeting on June 29th, the board received an update on the project. The town secured a grant to study the Northborough portion of the trail. The evaluation will include potential routes, design considerations, and the project's viability. BWALT will eventually connect Framingham to Worcester, tracing an abandoned Boston-Worcester trolley line. The project would include two spurs, one running from Southborough to Marlborough to connect to the Assabet River Rail Trail, and a second spur running from Northborough to Berlin to connect to the Mass Central Rail Trail. The trail has been a topic of debate in adjacent Westborough over the past couple of years. In 2021, Westborough's feasibility study found that the construction of BWALT could include a variety of benefits, including increased local spending, health benefits, and higher property values. Since then, portions of the trail have already advanced. Northborough Open Space Committee Chair John Campbell noted that the local officials see the project as a way to build community between existing and future trail networks. There was enthusiasm among the select board and other committees that this might come to fruition over time, Campbell said. It also presents the opportunity for connectivity of bike paths and possibly the aqueduct trails and eventually going northward. There's a lot of interconnectivity opportunities. Campbell emphasized that the discussion was informal and that the committee was not being asked to take any action at this time. We had news about the Westboro planned Porch Fest coming up in September, and now here's more Porch Fest news. Northborough's Porch Fest is a celebration of local music. It was a beautiful day to be in Northborough. Perfect summer weather set the stage for over 50 different performances that took place from noon to 6 p.m. on June 27th. Across town, musicians and residents gathered at 22 locations to celebrate local art and culture in Northborough's annual Porch Fest celebration. Porch Fests are when residents invite musicians to their front lawns, allowing audiences to weave through the town and pick which performances they'd like to see and hear. Public locations, like the Town Common and Ellsworth McAfee Park, also got involved in the fun. Performers and spectators hailed from far beyond the boroughs to see what Northborough had to offer. For John David Short, an indie pop singer-songwriter originally from Texas, the event was worth making the drive from his house in Lawrence. "I've never seen this anywhere else," Short said. "It's very unique. It's very fun. They're like block parties with a musician on every corner." Short was watching a performance from fellow singer-songwriter Linda Marks, who put out her 16th studio album in March. Marks had her audience laughing and singing along to her song, "The Turkey Social Dance," which details the romantic lives of the 28 wild turkeys inhabiting her neighborhood. Marks explained the research that went into the song, which includes vocabulary such as snood, rafter, and turkey purring. The song later won an award in the children's category at the Mid-Atlantic Song Contest. "I guess kids need to learn about wild turkeys," Marks laughed, before diving into the chorus. While the musicians had different styles, many shared a common motivation for performing. Bill Zolli took the stage at Trinity Church, serenading the crowd with a rendition of some Frank Sinatra songs. Zolli's lifelong love of music and passion for sharing it made Porch Fest the place for him. "Even before I knew what I was doing, I was making up songs and singing," Zolli said. DeBob, a band composed of Deborah Ault, the D-E-B in the name, and Bob LaValle, the B-O-B in the name, and their good goddaughter, Annalise, was a popular performer. While Deborah strummed the guitar and Bob played the keyboard, Annalise sang. Bob had a simple explanation for why they've been playing music for so long. "God brought us together." Whether it was music from DeBob or a fresh take on Turkey Love, there was so much music to enjoy. Porch Fest had a place for everyone, from first-time visitors to award-winning songwriters. One dead after wrong-way crash on I-290 in Northborough. A wrong-way driver led to a fatal crash in Northborough. At 8:57 p.m. on June 24th, Northborough dispatchers received multiple reports of a serious motor vehicle accident on Interstate 290 before Exit 27, the Solomon Pond Road exit. The Northborough Fire Department was dispatched, but all on-duty resources were already deployed to other incidents. Mutual aid was called, and help from Berlin, Marlborough, and Westborough arrived. According to the Northborough Fire Department and the Massachusetts State Police, a car was heading the wrong way on I-290 eastbound, ultimately crashing into another car. Video of the scene after the crash shows a car on its side engulfed in flames. There were multiple injuries and at least one trapped occupant. The driver and sole occupant of one of the vehicles escaped and was transported to UMass Memorial Medical Center with minor injuries. The wrong-way driver could not be rescued and was pronounced dead at the scene. Firefighters worked for 30 minutes and utilized 2,000 gallons of water to extinguish the vehicle fires. Interstate 290 eastbound was closed at the Church Street exit as the accident was investigated. Man arrested after standing naked along Route 135 in Northborough. At approximately 6:37 p.m. on June 5th, the Northborough Police Department was dispatched to an address along Route 135 after a report that a man was standing naked in his front yard. Police responded and found the man naked, asking him to go inside and put some clothes on. The department was called back approximately 10 minutes later for the same issue. This news program is a production of Audio Journal, proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
This is Bird Note. Seabirds, like this short-tailed shearwater, spend most of their lives on the open ocean. These birds rarely encounter humans on the high seas, yet they are dying because of our marine debris. Billions of pounds of plastic end up in our global oceans every year. Animals that mistake this pollution for food often die from malnutrition, poisoning, or damage to their digestive systems. In 2025, a study led by researchers at the Ocean Conservancy found that a seabird who consumes just 23 little pieces of plastic, about the same volume as 3 sugar cubes, has a 90% chance of death. The findings also add to growing evidence that rubber is especially dangerous to seabirds. An earlier study of shearwaters and their relatives found that ingesting debris from rubber balloons is 32 times more deadly than hard plastic. We can all make the world a safer place for birds and people by keeping plastic out of our waterways. You can replace single-use plastics with reusable items, join a community cleanup day in your area, or maybe skip the party balloons at your next event. Bird Note has inspired millions of people to take action for birds. Learn more and join us at birdnote.org. I'm Ariana Rimmel.
What's your vision?
My vision's 20/200.
Light perception in the right eye and zero vision in the left eye.
20/200 at best on my left eye, and on my right eye, I cannot.
No, I mean, what's your vision?
My goal is to become a journalist.
To be able to work.
Financial independence.
My vision is employment opportunities for all, including people with disabilities.
My vision is for all of my students to dream big.
That he become fully independent.
For my patients to live their best lives.
What's your vision?
What's your vision?
What is your vision?
At the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind, our vision is clear. We believe that all people who are blind or visually impaired should have the opportunity to work and thrive. To learn how we can help you meet your employment or workforce goals, call 800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.